And now, live from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
I think Kathy had posted that we would be back on camera again, finally. But I'm going to have to postpone it a little bit longer. Sorry about that, but I'm just not ready to. I'm not camera ready. Still dealing with the aftermath of this spinal surgery. So I hope you understand. Our sponsors tonight, we kind of had lost touch of For Earth or Earthy. You remember Susan? From Seattle, here's what she's sponsoring the program. Here's what she said. Well, you've sold me on the South. Susan For Earth from Seattle is now For Earth from Georgia and loving living in a town with a population of 228. No traffic. Can't wait for your fall get together in the Georgia mountains. Put me down as a participant. Come on, all you truth seekers. Join me. Well, do you know what town she moved to? You don't? Well, thanks, Susan. Earthy, For Earth. She went through an awful lot of hell there for a while, didn't she? Yeah. But now she's here in the North Georgia Mountains. I don't know if she's in the mountains, but she's here. Good on you, Susan. Oh, the book party. I think you know more about it than I do. You go ahead and explain it if you don't mind.
I'm not sure if I have sufficiently tweaked my microphone yet to be
honest. I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Uh-uh. It's always something, right? What Kathy wanted me to mention, this fall we're planning a get-together in the North Georgia Mountains at a lodge near some spectacular waterfalls. And the purpose of this get-together is it's going to be a book signing. When the book finally does come out, we'll have a bunch of copies there. And I guess it'll be two nights. And you have to provide your own transportation to Atlanta and then up to the lodge. But we're taking care of everything from that point on.
It's only about an hour.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, yeah, all you have to do is make sure you can get to Atlanta and then, I guess, rent a car. It's about an hour and a half north of Atlanta. And it'll be a good time. That's what Earthy is talking about. So we haven't firmed any of this up yet, but it's in the works. So, Christ, we used to go on cruises. No, although, I'll tell you what, the fall in the North Georgia Mountains are pretty spectacular. Also sponsoring tonight, Anonymous, who writes, thank you, humble and obedient servant, for sticking it out until the ship sinks. Thanks, Anonymous. And Susan. Boy, it's good to have For Earth back in the gang, for sure. All right, we have a moment with Bob that came in this afternoon that is unusual in that I don't think I've ever had a moment with Bob quite like this, but it's worth kicking back. I hope you have some popcorn and listening. There it is, another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's moment with Bob is titled Night Stalkers. Hey, Mike, this is how Mrs. Dudley, the caretaker's wife in Shirley Jackson's The Haunting of Hill House, warns the new tenants that they'll be on their own if anything goes awry at Hill House. Quote,
so there won't be anyone around if you need help. We couldn't even hear you in the night. No one could. No one lives any nearer than the town. No one else will come any nearer than that in the night, in the dark. And that's when nightmares come for us, when we're asleep and defenseless and alone, in the night, in the dark. Or as Stephen King wrote, when the moon is down and the hour is none. I know a lot about nightmares. I suppose we all do, but rarely do we talk about them. They're just dreams, after all. They're not real. They're not the stuff of small talk among friends over beers at a bar or sipping lattes at a Starbucks. If you tell anyone a dream you've had that ends with, and when I looked back, its eyes were full of blood, the conversation will stop dead. Guaranteed. No, nightmares are what you tell your shrink or the person who was sleeping next to you before you woke them up because you were thrashing and moaning or screaming in the night. And when your partner asks, what was it? You just can't dismiss it as if it had been nothing, just a dream, not with your heart pounding and your body slick with sweat. It was definitely something. For as long as it lasted, it was real. And the gravedigger in King's Salem's Lot, said, I didn't see nothing, and I never want to see it again. We describe looking objectively at people or events in, quote, the cold, harsh light of reality, end quote. The daytime, where things neatly add up, laws apply, there's order. But no matter how deeply we cleave to logic during the day, when we close our eyes to sleep, everything is true in the dark. Everything. What we can easily dismiss at noon will return to haunt us at night. Stephen King knows this. Here's what he said. At night, when I go to bed, I'm at pains to be sure that my legs are under the blankets after the lights go out. I'm not a child anymore, but I don't like to sleep with one leg sticking out. Because if a cool hand ever reached out from under the bed and grasped my ankle, I might scream. Yes, I might scream to wake the dead. That sort of thing doesn't happen, of course. The thing under my bed waiting to grab my ankle isn't real. I know that. And I also know that if I'm careful to keep my foot under the covers, it will never be able to grab my ankle. Morning comes and nightmares fade in the sun like old color snapshots. Details blur and recede until it becomes just another half-remembered dream dissolving in the light. Like a deep, terrible pain, fear is something we can remember having, but we don't experience it again in the remembering. We can describe what the pain or the fear was like in words, but we don't feel again the agony of it. I think it's a defense mechanism our minds use to keep us sane. Dreams may lose their power at dawn, but inevitably the sun sets. Yeah, I know a lot about nightmares, recurring nightmares. They're like tenants in a run-down rooming house in the shitty part of town. They each have their own room where they remain behind locked doors during the day because they all work the night shift. To quote Stephen King again, there's something creepy about any repeating dream, about knowing your subconscious is digging obsessively at some object that won't be dislodged. If that's even remotely true, then I've been digging in the nightmare pit for decades without unearthing a single stone. It's like I've been uncovering the outline of something unimaginably huge buried in the rock. I've had recurring nightmares for years, the robed figures lifting back their hoods, revealing they have no faces. I've had that one since I was 5. The dimly lit parlor where I'm to sit quietly on an overstuffed couch reading my Topper comic book, until something comes for me. It enters the room, but I cannot look up into its eyes. I stare fixedly at the base of the lamp on the end table because I know I should not look directly into its eyes. A claw-like hand reaches out and pulls the lamp's chain. Lights out.
Those dreams are the oldest tenants in my decrepit rooming house of nightmares. I've learned two things from my dreamscapes. Everything is true in the dark, and once the screaming starts, it's already too late. Whatever bad thing has happened, the scream is just an exclamation point at the end of the sentence. A million years ago, back in the 1970s, I briefly went to a therapist who was supposed to help me with my nightmares. He, along with everybody else in the I'm okay, you're okay era, held the New Agey position that fear, F-E-A-R, fear, stood for face everything and recover. I dismissed that concept the moment he finished saying it. Like most of the gibberish floating around that silly decade, it had never been tested, but that didn't stop the touchy-feely crowd from embracing it fully. It sounded good, so it must be true. But I believed then, as now, that our hominid ancestors were able to pass their DNA down through the millennia because for them, F-E-A-R was the acronym for fuck everything and run. The shrink gave me some tricks to try out that I thought were stupid, but I did them anyway. The same way a desperate insomniac will try any and all home remedies on the chance they might lead to a good night's sleep. They didn't help, of course not, but it wasn't for lack of trying. But that was a million years ago. Over time, I've become accustomed to my nightmares. The style of the dreams has become more sophisticated. The terror is still there, but the delivery system is more refined. Imagine your living room, the couch, the chairs, the TV, the bookshelves, the windows and curtains, your room. All of your things where they're supposed to be and seemingly safe. But to the right of the fireplace's mantle is a small discoloration on the wall. You move closer to inspect it. The paint has slightly bubbled up and you pick at it, uncovering a hole in the wall about an inch in diameter. You look through it and see a vast cosmic abyss lit by something completely different from mere stars. These shifting points of light are somehow aware and know they are being observed, and it is somehow understood that is not allowed. You begin to feel the coldness of terror when one by one they align in one direction to gaze back at you. Even if you remembered Friedrich Nietzsche's warning, you thought it was just a hole in your living room wall. How were you supposed to know what lay beyond? These days, my dreams start out completely prosaic until I discover one little thing slightly amiss. And with that discovery, everything unravels into another time and place where chaos rules the land and sky and everything above and below. Stephen King, Shirley Jackson, and other authors of unease, like the best Twilight Zone episodes, will start by establishing a reality we can readily accept, and then something happens, and unknowingly we take our first steps sideways. We still might think we're in our reality. It's still close enough from where we embarked, but with another step, and then another, we are somewhere in between light and shadow. Jack Finney, author of The Body Snatchers, wrote a story where everything changed because of a coin. Here's my version. Imagine you've just come home from work. You go into your bedroom and dump the contents of your pockets onto your dresser. Perhaps you put the change you've accumulated throughout the day into a small bowl. Your attention is drawn to a dime, mingled among the quarters and nickels. Instead of FDR's profile on the coin, you see Woodrow Wilson's. You take it into the TV room and show it to your wife and son, who have just finished watching the local news. You don't know anything about numismatics. The coin might not be worth anything, but you think it's interesting nonetheless, until your son pulls the dime from his pocket. "What's the big deal?" he asks, showing you his Woodrow Wilson dime. Your wife gives you a slightly odd look as she tells you and the boy to wash up for dinner. As you walk down the hall to the bathroom, you think about what this might mean and what's at stake. You know that Wilson's profile has never been on a dime, ever. But your wife and son don't see anything amiss. As you wash your hands and face, you begin to see the borders of your problem more clearly. The people in this house are not your wife and son. This is not your house. The borders expand exponentially until you realize this is not even your universe. You began the day in one world, and somehow, without realizing it, you are now in another. And you have no clear idea how you got here or how to get back. The borders stretch to infinity. And that's why I say, once the screaming starts, it's already too late. As the woman and the boy realize, cringing behind the locked bathroom door, as you yourself realize when you just can't stop the screaming, whatever has happened, already happened. The screams are just the exclamation points at the end of the sentence. But those are just books, stories, and dreams are not real. Except, each day there are more and more anomalies eating holes in our reality. Things that shouldn't be, suddenly are. And we're supposed to unquestioningly accept this altered reality. And tomorrow, and the next day, the reality of what is altered again, and then again. And we're supposed to glide into the new version because that's what we're supposed to do. No one on the nightly news, on any of the networks, is going to hold up a dime with Woodrow Wilson's likeness on it and proclaim, "This is not what it is supposed to be. Things are not what they appear to be." The logic of our nightmares has shambled into the daylight and defeated it. What was unthinkable is now commonplace. But we are not trapped in the middle ground between light and shadow. We are still capable of choosing between the two. But for some reason, we have yet to make the decision. But we must hurry. Someday, there might not be any relief in waking. The alarm clock will go off. You'll fumble to stop the buzzing. You'll swing your legs over the side of the bed. And before you can slide into your slippers, a cold, leathery hand grabs your right ankle and pulls hard. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at the local cemetery. I got Jesus Christ, Bob. Man, what the hell am I going to do tonight when I go to bed? We've been sleeping in separate beds, Kathy and me, because of the surgery and the fact that I, you know, wake up 2 or 3 times a night screaming. But it's not from nightmares. But now when I go to bed by my, see, I always thought whenever I sleep in bed with Kathy, which is all the time, I just figure if there's a monster under the bed, it'll grab her. You know, and if it goes for me, I'll just push her towards it. But when you're sleeping by yourself in a great big goddamn king-size bed, and the house is quiet, because like Susan, Earthy, who has discovered silence in the North Georgia Mountains, it's awfully quiet where we live also, because we're in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. But when that silence settles in, I know exactly what Bob is talking about. Most of my nightmares are awake nightmares, though. At least once a night, I'll hear something at the window in my bedroom. Now, the bedroom is 2 stories up, so obviously if there's something there, it's either got wings or it's awfully tall. But I'll hear this scritch, scritch. And since Kathy and I haven't been sleeping together since I've had the surgery, I've been sleeping with one of our 2 dogs, which is great because the dog has become my barometer as to whether or not I should get out of bed and go downstairs saying, "Kathy, Kathy, Kathy." But the dog just lays there, and I figure, okay, the scritch at the window is the wind, or it's a goblin or something. But it's not anything that's going to harm, because the dog and our two dogs go berserk if anybody is within 100 yards of the house. But I know what he's writing about. Nightmares. Thank you, Bob. Have a good sleep tonight. What, Kathy?
And Nick is going off to college.
And Nick's going off to college. That's right. Yeah, oh, that's right. Last time I saw Nick, it was you, me, Kathy.
I'm Kathy.
I mean, you, you, Kathy, me, Molly.
Arminda.
Yeah, Arminda and Bob.
Jude.
And Jude.
And Kay. Is Kay there?
No, no. No, it was just us, two couples, two kids, and Jude, and we walked the streets of Seattle at night. You remember that? And now the kid's going off to college. You're just a little kid. Yeah, Molly was six. Okay, that's enough. You're supposed to be doing a podcast, Malloy. I don't know if I can now after reading Bob's moment here. Jesus Christ. You know, I love him like a brother, but I sometimes think he spent too much time in Hollywood, too much time either watching, writing, or producing these horror films. I'm not sure exactly what he did. I know he was, I think he worked in the production of some of these low-budget horror films, not necessarily the slasher ones, but more, a little more sophisticated. But Bob is not the type of person I would be happy spending a week with in the North Canadian mountains in a cabin somewhere off the grid where it was just Bob and me ice fishing, right? No, I love him like a brother. Oh, Bob, if they ever want to hire you to take care of a hotel in the off-season, a big hotel that overlooks God knows what, don't take it. Don't take it, pal. I'll work and I'll pay. Play makes Jack a dull boy. I'll work and I'll play makes Jack a dull boy. I'll work and I'll play. Now, that's a nightmare movie. I'll tell you what, I need something to segue here into the will you do some break here, a couple 3 minute break, and we'll be back and begin the podcast. That was not a beginning to this podcast. That was a moment with Bob, which in this case was a moment a little bit too long, I think. Jesus Christ. I'm going to have to look under the bed before I go to climb into it tonight. Ah! Our sponsors tonight, Susan Earthy. Her message, well, you sold me on the South. Susan For Earth from Seattle is now For Earth from Georgia and loving living in a town with a population of 228. No traffic. Can't wait for your fall get-together in the Georgia mountains. Put me down as a participant. Come on, all you true seekers, join me. We'll be talking more about that as the summer progresses. And our other sponsor tonight is Anonymous, who writes, thank you, humble and obedient servant, for sticking it out until the ship sinks. I will guarantee you I'll be going overboard before that. I do not believe in going down with the ship, but I understand what you're saying, Anonymous. I got a few names here I want to share with you. Layla Anwar Al Gandur, 8 months old. Ez Eldin Musa Muhammad Al Sama'ak, 14 years old. We saw Al Fadi as Al-Sheikh Khalif, 15 years old. Ahmed Abdel Musa Al-Shar, 16. Saeed Mohammed Abu Al-Khair, 16. Ibrahim Ahmed Al-Zarqa, 18. Iman Ali Sadiq Al-Sheikh, 19. Zaid Mohammed Hassan Omar, 19. Mutassem Fawzi Abu Lulay, 20. Anas Hamdan Salim Kadia, 21. Mohammed Abd As-Salam Harz, 21. Yahia Ishmael Rajab Al-Dakur, 22. Mustafa Mohammed Samir Mahmoud Al-Mazri, 22. Ez Eldin Nahid Aloyuti, 23. Mahmoud Mustafa Ahmed Asaf, 23. Ahmed Fayez Harb Shahada, 23. Ahmed Awad Allah, 24. Khalil Ishmael Khalil Mansour, 25. Mohammed Ashraf Abu Sita, 26. Bilal Ahmed Abdu Dikha, 26. Ahmed Majed Qasim Atta Allah, 27. Mahmoud Rabah Abu Ma'amar, 28. Musab Yusuf Abu Layla, 28. Ahmed Fawzi Al-Atair, 28. Mohammed Abdul Rahman Mehdad, 28. Obadah Salim Farhan, 30. Jihad Mufid Al-Fara, 30. Fatih Hassan Abdu Salah, 30. Motaz Bassam Kamil Al-Nunu, 31. Mohammed Riyad Abdul Rahman Al-Amundi, 31. Jihad Mohammed Othman Musa, 31. Shahir Mahmoud Mohammed Al-Madhun, 32. Musa Jabir Abu Abdul Salam Abu Haznaya, 35. Mohammed Mahmoud Abdul Moti Abdul Al, 39. Ahmed Mohammed Ibrahim Hamdan, 27. Ismail Khalil Ramadan Al-Dahuk, 30. Ahmed Mahmoud Mohammed Al-Rantisi, 27. Alaa Al-Nur Ahmed Al-Khatib, 28. Mahmoud Yaha Abdawahab Hussein, 24. Ahmed Abdullah Al-Adini, 30. Saadi Said Fami Abdul Salah, 16. Ahmed Zahir Hamid Al-Shawa, 24. Mohammed Hani Hosni Al-Najar, 33. Fadl Mohammed Atta Habshi, 34. Mukhtar Kaamil Salim Abu Kamash, 23. Mahmoud Wa'il Mahmoud Jundia, 21. Abdul Rahman Sami Abu Matar, 18. Ahmed Salim Alayan Al-Jarf, 26. Mahmoud Suleiman Ibrahim Akil, 32. Mohammed Hassan Mustafa Al-Abadila, 25. Kamil Jihad Kamil Mihna, 19. Mahmoud Saber Hamad Abu Taima, 23. Ali Mohammed Ahmad Kafaja, 21. Abdul Salam Yusuf Abdul Wahab, 39. Mohammed Samir Duedar, 27. Those are the names and ages of 55 Palestinians slaughtered by the Israelis today. Well, Nikki Haley was walking out of the UN Security Council meeting as the envoy from the Palestinians began to speak. I remember the first jihad that I was aware of, the first uprising by the Palestinians who were occupied by the Israelis since 1948. I'm sure there must have been other uprisings that just didn't have a proper name. But back in the mid-80s, all of a sudden, media or somebody gave the uprising a proper name, jihad. And I remember in the mid-80s, when the uprising began, I meant to say Intifada was the name that was given, not jihad. But when that Intifada began, it was mostly young people. You heard the ages of these people. I think the oldest person that was murdered by the Israelis today was 39 years old, and the youngest was 8 months old. But the vast majority of these 55 people are in their 20s, were in their 20s, until the Israelis decided that they shouldn't live anymore and killed them. And it has to be noted that these Palestinians were armed with stones and tires. It should be noted the Israelis were armed too. With just about everything you can imagine. Including the latest now to terrorize the Palestinians, drone aircraft, drones, that are capable of flying over a crowd maybe 200 yards back from the border between Israel and Gaza, and then drop tear gas bombs or incendiary bombs. Now, these 56 people whose names I read, that was the death toll Monday. I said Tuesday. I don't know what the death toll is today. But I do know that with this slaughter going on, the United States government now has made it clear under this filthy Nazi fucker Donald Trump that the United States is no longer even going to try to pretend to be an honest broker in the terror that the Palestinians have put up with now for 70 years. I think the most hideous insult that is leveled against the Palestinians by certain Israelis and certain American Zionists is that there is no such thing, that such a thing doesn't exist. Such a thing as a Palestinian doesn't exist. I've heard that a couple of times now. It has to do with geography, but the idea of saying, well, you know, these people, these animals, these subhumans that we Israelis have had to deal with, God help us, they're not real. They're not Palestinians. There's no such thing. They're terrorists. And I listened to this piece of shit conducting the press briefings occasionally, Raj or whatever the hell his name is. You would think, wouldn't you, that someone of his nationality and his name and his color and where he came from and what his family endured under the British that Sarah Huckabee Sanders associate liar wouldn't be able to stand in front of the Washington Press Corps and tell the fucking lies and make the comments the dismissive comments about people who had their homes taken from them, their land taken from them, their families taken from them, forced into so-called refugee camps, where we are now into the fourth generation of people living in refugee camps. And yet the Palestinians are labeled as the terrorists, the cause of all this. Hamas is pushing them to go die. What a bunch of bullshit. I mean, so Nikki Haley walks out of the chamber, UN Security Council meeting, as Riyad Mansour. And do you know what title Riyad Mansour has? He is called the permanent observer of Palestine to the United Nations. Permanent observer of Palestine. Not a diplomat, not an elected official, a permanent fucking observer. He began to speak. And Nikki Haley pulled her ass up off of her seat and walked out. This was a few hours after she had praised Israel for acting with restraint. That was her word, restraint. Let me tell you again, the youngest child killed, the youngest Palestinian killed Monday was 8 months old. There were 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds. And the vast majority, 20-somethings, who will never fucking do anything again because they don't have a life anymore. They're dead. And the bloody part of all this is the fact that so many of the Palestinians who have been murdered by the Israelis have been murdered with weapons either sold to or given to the Israelis from the United States, just like the people in Yemen who are dying by the thousands. They are being slaughtered with American weapons. But the Palestinians have experienced this, seen this over and over and over and over again. The most densely populated scrap of earth on this planet is not someplace in India or China. It's Gaza. There has been, what is it, Kathy, a 6-7 year long blockade by Egypt and Israel? Egypt, for fuck's sake, Egypt. A blockade that denies medicine, water, food. The Israelis are fucking Nazis. Do you not get that? What do you call this? What do you call this? Oh, we're defending our borders. No, you're not, you lying sons of bitches. You are practicing genocide. Just exactly what was perpetrated against you without the gas chambers. You're committing your genocide in the open air. Hamas does not have the power. Israel does. And this other miserable creature, this pig who knows exactly how to manipulate the moron in the White House. I'm talking about Netanyahu. He has the power. this racist son of a bitch. I mentioned the names of 55 dead. The Washington Post has updated that. The death toll from yesterday's protests climbed to 61. Nikki Haley, who also is of Indian descent, who also had to struggle, her immediate ancestors, her, I don't know, grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents, who the fuck knows, but Nikki Haley's heritage is India. What would she have done in the days when Gandhi was, oh, I don't know, doing his salt march or something? What would Nikki Haley have done? Would she have come out and said, Gandhi is causing the trouble? You know, she would have. Gandhi was a fucking terrorist who didn't use weapons. Shame on you, Nikki Haley. Shame on you. You should know better. As Israeli forces dropped drones with tear gas and shot Palestinian protesters in Gaza on Monday, U.S. President Donald Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor, Jared Kushner, called the protesters, the ones who were dying, quote, part of the problem and not part of the solution. You skinny little rich fucker, you. You useless little prick. You know, Kushner should be taken to the fence between Gaza and Israel. Don't be hiding in Jerusalem, you ignorant savage. Go down to the fence and holler at the Gazans. Holler at them. You're doing this! Kushner's family has longtime ties to Netanyahu. And this little prick failed to disclose that he once led a group that funded West Bank settlements, which are illegal under international law. But Kushner, being a little Zionist prick that he is, he doesn't care. He's married to the daughter of the president of the United States. He doesn't give a fuck. And then that rotten Raj Shah, Deputy White House Press Secretary, claimed that the Palestinian deaths yesterday were, quote, and I can hardly say this without just jumping up and going fucking berserk. Raj Shah, an American, a spokesman for this miserable fucker Trump, claimed that the Palestinians who were murdered on Monday were, quote, an unfortunate propaganda attempt by Hamas. Were the Jews who rebelled in the Warsaw Ghetto, was that an unfortunate propaganda attempt by the Zionists of Europe in the 40s? How can these people like Raj Shah, Nikki Haley, whose own people were treated like dirt, shit, mud, crap under the heel of the British Empire? How many people died in India during the convulsions that occurred after the British said, fuck it, we're out of here? And why did they say, fuck it, we're out of here? Because of Gandhi. who was unarmed. I'll tell you something, Truth Seekers. You know, the United States has been led in the past by people, occasionally by people who seem not to care that they were conducting business of the United States on an international level that guaranteed hatred towards the United States. And then you hear these right-wing devils saying, well, everybody wants to come here. You know who wants to come here? The people whose lives and homes and families and countries have been utterly destroyed. Where are they going to go? Call me dense and thick, but I can never understand why Japanese people would ever want to live in the United States after what we did to them at the end of World War II. I can never understand why Vietnamese people wanted to come here after we destroyed their country, totally destroyed their country, and murdered 2.5 million of them. I don't get that. I can't understand that. But this is America, where we still have monuments all over the fucking place dedicated to treasonous traitors. To people who felt it was real okay to enslave other people, beat them to death, boil them alive, kill them, separate their families, destroy them. This is fucked up, you know? This is really fucked up. Gunfire rang out over Gaza City today as rounds were fired during funeral processions. Residents were attending funerals of their family members and preparing to mark the anniversary of the Nakba, or catastrophe. More than two-thirds of Gaza's population is descended from refugees who fled, expelled. Israel created itself 70 years ago. Crowds at the border today were thin. After the Palestinians organizing the demonstrations called for a day of mourning to bury the dead. Demonstrators were asked to go home early as the death toll climbed. Monday's killings more than doubled the number of Palestinians slain in Gaza during 6 weeks of demonstrations dubbed the March of Return. 3,000 have been injured, about half of them from live ammunition. At least six of the dead were under 18, including a girl whose family said she was 14. The health ministry also reported that an eight-month-old baby died after inhaling tear gas at the main protest area in Gaza. Speculation was rife that crowds were thinner because Egypt had pressured Hamas to order people home. Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh was summoned to Cairo on a last-minute trip Sunday night, and senior leaders were noticeably absent from Monday's demonstrations. Egypt controls Gaza's southern border, which opens only sporadically. Shame on you, Egypt. Well, Israel has blockaded its boundary with the territory for the past 10 years. There was some speculation that the Egyptians may have offered some short-term concessions to Hamas. If Hamas would order the people of Gaza to stand down, what would Egypt offer? A sustained opening of the Rafah crossing point with Egypt, which has been open in recent days. Israeli officials justified the military's tactics as necessary to stop Palestinians from breaking through the border into Israel. Rupert Colville, spokesman for the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, said today that while Israel has a right to defend itself, lethal force was not justified against people who were simply approaching the fence. He condemned Monday's, quote, appalling, deadly violence, end quote. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas condemned a continuing what he called massacre of the Palestinian people. South Africa joined Turkey in announcing that it was recalling its ambassador from Israel. Big fucking deal. Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim called on Muslim countries to review their ties with Israel in the wake of the violence. Benjamin Netanyahu later attacked Turkish President Recep Erdogan on Twitter. Netanyahu said that Erdogan is, quote, one of the great supporters of Hamas, and there is no doubt that he understands terror and the massacres well, and I suggest that he not preach morality to us, end quote. That's right. Israel stands above any kind of lecture about morality. Because after all, they are God's chosen people, right? Huh? Isn't that what you were taught? I don't give a shit what your religion is. Weren't you taught that? Of course you were. Israeli newspapers today contrasted the upbeat inauguration ceremony for the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem with pictures of the violence on the border, but characterized the Israeli response to the demonstration in terms of self-defense. Well, you can, I don't know how much you can handle, but you can go to YouTube and find videos of the violence the past couple of days or the past couple of years or the past couple of decades or the past couple of generations against the Palestinians. It's all there. It's all there. I'll be back in a minute. Program sponsored tonight by Susan and by Anonymous. Susan writes, well, you've sold me on the South. Susan, for Earth from Seattle, is now for Earth from Georgia, and loving living in a town with a population of 228, no traffic. Can't wait for your fall get-together in the Georgia mountains. Put me down as a participant. Come on, all you true seekers, join me. And from Anonymous, thank you, humble and obedient servant, for sticking it out until the ship sinks.
That's hopeful.
Kathy says, that's hopeful. Well, what do you say? Look where we're living. Okay, on to Donald Trump's next glorious victory. Hold the Nobel Peace Prize, though. North Korea on Wednesday. That's tomorrow. Tomorrow here, Wednesday there. North Korea threw into question, this is from Reuters news agency, threw into question an unprecedented summit between Kim Jong-un and Trump scheduled for next month. North Korea denounced military exercises between South Korea and the United States as a provocation and calling off high-level talks with the South Koreans. Of course. You really didn't think this was going to happen, did you, Truth Seekers? Kim Jong-un has been playing Trump like a banjo. Just like Putin, just like Netanyahu. A report on North Korea's official news agency, the KCNA, Korean Central News Agency, angrily attacked what they called, or what was labeled, the Max Thunder. That's what the United States labeled, I guess, air combat drills, which North Korea said involved U.S. stealth fighters and B-52 bombers, and appeared to mark a break in the warming ties between North and South Korea and possibilities between Pyongyang and Washington. Trump doesn't want to see this meeting that's scheduled June 12th in Singapore. He doesn't want to see this meeting to go south. Because this would enter him into the history books. The only history book he's entered into now is the one that the Israelis will write about Jerusalem. According to Reuters, of course, and according to you and according to me, because we have to live with this son of a bitch, Trump has raised expectations for a successful meeting, and even as many experts, people who have forgotten more than this orange bastard will ever know, especially about that part of the world, especially about the North Koreans. But these analysts have been skeptical of the chances of bridging the gap due to questions about North Korea's willingness to give up a nuclear arsenal that now threatens the United States. May I add my two cents worth here, if I may?
Yes, you may.
Thank you very much. The day North Korea fully, completely, honestly, and openly gives up its nuclear whatever will be the day that Mike Pence will be serving drinks of ice water in hell. That is never going to happen. Never. Never. North Korea, all this talk about, oh, we invite the world to watch us blow up our nuclear. That's horseshit. It's not going to happen. And I've told you why. And you probably already knew. I don't enlighten people. I just talk. But after what the United States did to North Korea in 1950 and 51 and 52, a million and a half to 2 million civilians dead, firebombed cities, the entire infrastructure reduced to rubble, dams blown up in violation of Geneva Conventions. Never mind. Anyway, the Korean news agency called these air drills a provocation that goes beyond the trend, it goes against the trend of the warming ties between North and South Korea. Yeah, leave it to Trump. Leave it to the U.S. to fuck everything up. Absolutely. The South Korean news agency quoted the North Korean news agency as saying, quote, this exercise targeting us, which is being carried out across South Korea, is a flagrant challenge to the Panmunjom Declaration and an intentional military provocation running counter to the positive political developments on the Korean Peninsula, end quote. They added this, quote, the United States will also have to undertake careful deliberations about the fate of the planned North Korea-U.S. summit in light of this provocation, this military ruckus, I love the language they use, jointly conducted with the South Korean authorities, this ruckus. Ooh, ruckus. They must be using an American slang dictionary from what, the 40s, 30s? Well, I mean, just stop and think. I know these analogies are tiresome, but in some kind of weird alternate universe like Bob Alexander wrote about tonight, imagine, say, Mexico and Russia conducted war games in the Gulf of Mexico, just outside that area that the U.S. considers territorial waters. And imagine if they did this every year, maybe twice a year, and the threat was very explicit. We're holding these war games to let you know that this is what we're going to do to you. Eventually, we're going to come into the United States and we are going to fucking destroy everything that's not nailed down. And then we're going to come back a second time and get the shit that is nailed down. What do you think the United States would do? Nah, never mind. Never mind. So if you were laying in a supply of popcorn and getting ready to watch the televised, I guess it'll be televised, meeting between Trump and Kim, you might not want to do that. It'd be a waste of money for popcorn, although it's not that expensive, is it? John Kelly, White House Chief of Staff, former Marine General. Juan Cole, writing at his blog site in Forum Comment, refers to Kelly as an immigrant-hating bigot. As demonstrated by a long series of draconian statements and measures that would have embarrassed most normal people into a lifetime vow of silence. Cole points this out. Kelly bizarrely defended Confederate slave drivers of the 1860s as having lived at a time before the evils of slavery were apparent to moral people. Haiti abolished slavery in 1804, Mexico in 1824, Tunisia in 1846. But Kelly's assertion is a little more understandable if you listen to an NPR interview of about last week on undocumented immigration. Kelly's interview went like this. Kelly: "But a big name of the game is deterrence, NPR. Family separation stands as a pretty tough deterrent." Kelly: "It could be a tough deterrent. It would be a tough deterrent. A much faster turnaround on asylum seekers." NPR: "Even though people say that's cruel and heartless to take a mother away from her children?" Kelly: "Well, I wouldn't put it that way. The children would be taken care of, put into foster care or whatever. But the big point is they elected to come illegally to the United States, and this is a technique that no one hopes will be used extensively for very long." You miserable son of a bitch. This doctrine that Kelly seems to think is valid, legitimate, proper, this doctrine of deterrence of undocumented immigration into the U.S., through family separation, when they show up, just take the kids away. Juan Cole says, it's all undergirded by a special kind of sadism and ignorance combined. First of all, villagers in Honduras are not going to know about Kelly's policy. Second, they're so desperate that many will take the risk anyway. Third, it is wrong to pounce and take U.S. citizen children away from their mothers and fathers all of a sudden, giving them no time to make alternate arrangements. As for foster homes, with all due respect to the dedicated people who often run them, social science has proven that they are the biggest producers of a criminal class in the United States. Children growing up without strong parental role models have a much greater chance of ending up in prison. Yeah, that's right. Social science says if you want a safe society, don't deport the parents of U.S. citizen children. So there's the two issues here. There's the issue that we have seen a little bit. I think media tends to stay away from it because they don't know how to handle the video showing parents who are undocumented having to let loose of their children who are American citizens because they were born here, while the parents are being rounded up to be thrown into some fucking twilight zone someplace. Countries of origin in Central America that we have bloodied and brutalized. Countries run by fascist former generals that we fucking trained in how to kill their own citizens, how to torture their own citizens. And this hateful son of a bitch, Kelly, oh, well, it's a good deterrence. You know, we just tell him, if you show up at the border with your kid and you come across, we're going to take your fucking kid. How's that? We'll just take your kid. There is a moral price that the United States eventually is going to pay for some of the things that we have done. No, it's not going to come from some sky spook. It's going to come from hubris. It's going to come from the belief that is so prevalent right now that the United States can get away with any fucking thing, anything, any atrocity. Look at the people we have in government. Look at this psychotic Mike Pence. Look at the people in the cabinet. Man. I'll be back in a minute. Going back to what Juan Cole wrote at Informed Comment, every time I come across this kind of stuff, and it's frequently now, I just wonder what – I want to say what has happened to us. Of course, I realize that it's always been a bunch of hypocrisy and lies in this country. It always has been. But we've had our good moments too, I guess. But this is what Juan Cole reports. Under Trump, ICE, the Immigration Enforcement, which, by the way, was only created recently. ICE is not a longstanding government agency. It should be decommissioned. It should be put out of business. But Juan writes, under Trump, ICE has been routinely doing things like traumatizing families by arresting undocumented parents when they come to pick up their children at school in front of the eyes of the children and leaving the children unattended. The agents are not wrong to enforce the law, but this sort of tactic is clearly the result of instructions from Kelly and his successor, and is deliberate psychological warfare on American citizens. And Kelly's self-satisfaction that he displayed on the NPR interview with getting rid of unwanted adults and putting their children, U.S. citizens, in what he called foster care or whatever, can only be compared to one phenomenon in American history. Here's what Juan Cole compares it to. Back in the days of slavery, white slave owners in the mid-Atlantic states like Kentucky used to separate fathers and sometimes mothers from their children and, quote, sell them down the river, end quote, to the big plantation owners of the Deep South. Brown and black slaves were, like undocumented immigrants, not citizens, and so they were not conceived by white elites as fully human persons. Hence, their families could be divided at will, and parents could be sent far away, never to see their children again. They were treated like thoroughbred animals. Kelly went on to slam these immigrants for not knowing English and for being unassimilable and having no skills. In fact, as conservative godfather Milton Friedman argued, they wouldn't come here if they weren't finding jobs that locals would not or could not fill. As for language and assimilation, Kelly's own Italian-American side of the family came without English and remained here without citizenship for decades. Undocumented immigration to the U.S. is no longer a big problem. Every year, more Mexicans have left than have come in during the past decade. There was an issue in the late 80s and 90s, but measures were taken to deal with that issue. Since 2002, about 5 million persons have been deported, possibly a bit more under Obama than under Bush. There isn't a crisis of arrivals, and there isn't a crisis in enforcement. Most of those who came in the 1980s and 1990s by now have firm roots in their communities and are thick with citizen relatives, and some sort of amnesty ought to be arranged if we were a decent society, which is becoming clear we are not. But then, if we were a decent society, we wouldn't have invaded and occupied Iraq or elected Donald Trump president. Kelly's unconscious evocation of the old white supremacist practice of separating brown and black families and selling the adults down the river tells us that not as much has changed since the 1860s as a lot of us would have liked. Oy. And then on the heels of that article, I found this one at the Washington Post. The Trump administration is making preparations to hold immigrant children on military bases. According to Defense Department communications, this would be the latest sign that the Trump criminal enterprise is moving forward with plans to split up families who cross the border illegally. According to an email notification sent to Pentagon staffers, the Department of Health and Human Services will make site visits to four military installations in Texas and Arkansas during the next 2 weeks to evaluate their suitability to shelter children. Internment camps? Haven't we been there? The bases would be used for minors under 18 who arrive at the border without an adult relative or after the U.S. government has separated them from their parents. The email characterized the site visits as a preliminary assessment. The email says, quote, no decisions have been made at this time. However, an official at Health and Human Services confirmed the military site visits, speaking on the condition of anonymity because the plans are not yet public. This official said Health and Human Services currently has bed space to hold 10,571 children. Think about that one for a minute. 10,000 children housed on military bases, separated from their parents. Anyway, in a statement, HHS's Administration for Children and Families said its programs require, quote, routinely evaluated the needs and capacity of an existing network of approximately 100 shelters in 14 states. Continuing with the quote here, additional properties with existing infrastructure are routinely being identified and evaluated by federal agencies as potential locations for temporary sheltering. Isn't that a lovely word? Sheltering. You know, I lost faith in that word when I started to hear the advice that when a terrorist enters your school, you should shelter in place. The fuck does that mean? Jesus. Anyway, the facilities they're talking about are 91% capacity right now, according to this Health and Human Services official. And the orange bastards' crackdown plans could push thousands more children into government care. And this official said the Department of Homeland Security has not provided projections for how many additional children to expect. Do you realize what I'm talking about here? Is this registering with you if you're listening to this podcast? Plans that are in the works to house over 10,000 children who will be taken from their parents. And other children who will watch their parents being deported. The children are American citizens. The parents are not. And the law enforcement that shows up doesn't give a fuck. No interest in what happens to the kids. Just gonna do my job. Gotta deport this person. Oh, she's been living here for 22 years? Tough shit. Get in the paddy wagon, ma'am. And then Washington Post reports that Trump officials say they are moving forcefully to halt a sharp increase in the number of families crossing the border illegally this spring, many of whom are Central Americans seeking asylum. U.S. border agents in March and April arrested more than 100,000 people who crossed the border illegally. Trump has seized at the increase, singling out Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen for blame. This orange idiotic fuck ordered Nielsen to, quote, close the border and cut off the migration flows. Ms. Nielsen and Attorney General Jeff Sessions, the Goblin, together say that the Trump administration will take the extraordinary measure of filing criminal charges against anyone who crosses the border illegally, including parents traveling with their children. You dirty fuckers, you. This is a Christian nation? Shit. In most cases, that means adults will be held at immigration jails to await court dates. Do you know how long those court dates take to come up for any particular defendant? While their children are sent into foster care. Sessions, in a speech last week, put it this way. If you're smuggling a child, then we're going to prosecute you, and that child will be separated from you, probably, as required by law. If you don't want your child separated, then don't bring them across the border illegally. It's not our fault that somebody does that. You ignorant, savage, prick, Klansman, you. Of course it's my fault. These people are coming from countries that we have fucking shredded, destroyed. Jesus, God. One Health and Human Services official, and you can take this with as many grains of salt as you want to, said that children held in HHS custody spend an average of 45 days in the government's care, and they are provided with educational and recreational opportunities. The agency then conducts background checks on potential sponsors for the minors. Oh, I'm sure that's thorough. And in 85% of cases, the children are released to a parent or other adult relative already present in the United States, the official said. Christ. See, there's been a big difference, a big demographic shift. It used to be that the people who had crossed the border illegally would be Hispanic males, either coming from Central America or coming from Mexico, coming specifically to work to support their families back in their home countries, the dirty bastards, right? But that's changed now. Now we have families who are trying to get away from the violence and chaos that exists in Honduras and El Salvador and Guatemala and where else? Even starting in Nicaragua now. You know, this, I can't help but not draw the comparison. What we are doing to these families is reminiscent. It's not an exact copy, but it's reminiscent of what we did to Jewish refugees who tried to get into the United States. What was the name of that boat, Kathy, that ship that carried all those people that went to Cuba and they weren't allowed to disembark? Came to the United States, weren't allowed to disembark. What was the name of that boat? And it was filled with Jewish men, women, and children. And even though the world knew Hitler's attitude toward the Jews, it didn't make a fucking bit of difference. They were told to get out of here because the anti-Semitism in the 30s and the 40s in this country, I don't need to explain that to you. So this shipload of people sent back to, what, Potsdam or wherever they boarded this vessel, and nobody knows how many of them were then rounded up and executed. But isn't that what we're doing now? Telling people you can't come into our sacred white country? That was the same shit they laid on the Jews. You can't come here. You're a Jew. You're not like us. We're Christian. You killed our Savior. Well. Critics of this family separation practice that these good Christians like Jeff Sessions are conducting, critics denounce the practice as heartless, saying it inflicts additional trauma on families fleeing from Central America's bloody gang wars. How did Trump respond? Send the National Guard. Yeah. I can't help but wonder again and again and again, and I'm not shitting you. I Bob Alexander lies awake at night thinking about all kinds of horrible shit, which I've done before, but I lie awake at night thinking about all kinds of horrible shit too. But it has to do with children and immigrants and people fleeing chaos and disaster and death. The latest, I guess I should let this wait until church night, but I can't. I just can't do it. The latest from the good Christian evangelical pigs in this country. A group calling itself Godly America sent out a press release through the Christian Newswire yesterday, calling attention to a Southern Baptist pastor who has submitted a resolution against social justice. That resolution will be considered at the Southern Baptist Convention's annual meeting in Dallas in June. Godly America, a ministry to remind Christians of their rich heritage and history as Americans, and to call America back to the Judeo-Christian principles on which America is founded, seems to consist of the pastor, this guy named Grady Arnold. It's probably one of those AstroTurf organizations. This piece of shit, Grady Arnold, is the only person in the Godly America. In a press release, this guy says, quote, if Southern Baptists in the heartland knew the extent that social justice was being promoted at the Southern Baptist Convention, they would be aghast. Southern Baptists need to know that their cooperative program dollars are going to an agenda they don't agree with. This prick's resolution says that social justice activism, which is also appears under such labels as eco-justice, economic justice, racial justice, global justice. This prick says all of this stuff should be considered evil. Should be considered evil. Social justice movement is being promoted worldwide right now, but not in this country. This is what this crazy son of a bitch says. First of all, this guy's resolution notes that back in 2010, Glenn Beck, remember him, told people to run away from churches that teach social justice. So this moron's website suggests this Arnold, this preacher, that he may have been taking some heat from fellow Southern Baptists for referencing Beck, a Mormon, in a Southern Baptist resolution because, you know, many Baptists like Trump's advisor, Robert Jeffress, that hate-filled fucker, don't consider Mormons to be Christians. I don't think he considers them to be human. Well, it's religion. So
this Reverend Arnold responds to his critics by saying that, quote, being an unbeliever does not disqualify you from seeing any objective truth. What the fuck does that mean? And then he draws on analogy, saying it would be foolish for Christians to ignore a warning about a comet headed toward Earth simply because it was discovered by atheist astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson. Oh, fuck. This is his resolution. Listen to this. Whereas the social justice movement and worldview are being promoted worldwide and is being presented using various labels such as eco-justice, economic justice, racial justice, and global justice, to name a few. And whereas social justice by definition is based on anti-biblical and destructive concepts of Marxist ideology, and among other things is interested in redistributing wealth, opportunity, and privileges within society. Ooh, let's not take away the white privileges. And whereas social justice activism should be considered evil in that it is a vehicle to promote abortion, homosexuality, gender confusion, and a host of other ideas that are antithetical to the gospel, the Christian worldview, and of God's call to holiness. And whereas social justice is now being promoted and enforced by governments worldwide, with Canada being one example, that as of 2011 developed social justice tribunals and is seeking to enforce Bill C-16, a bill passed in 2017 that in application sees it as a hate crime to use the wrong gender pronoun to describe an individual. Horseshit. And whereas social justice is deceptive in that well-meaning Christians become unwittingly drawn into such ideology under the false assumption that social justice equates to standing up for people's rights and compassion, and whereas social justice is based on Marxism and postmodernism and should be opposed because of his anti-biblical stance and worldview, but still Christians are attempting to blend social justice with Christianity. However, they must realize that to accept social justice ideology is to invite liberal theology and liberation theology into our churches, schools, and institutions. And whereas authoritative voices have warned against such, for example, when Jerry Falwell Jr. declared that social justice was insidious, and Glenn Beck warned of a perversion of the gospel because of the toxic nature of social justice, and whereas social justice is showing its true colors at George Washington University and other campuses in 2018, where they are holding classes and seminars seeking to combat what they call Christian privilege and attacking Christianity for its prominence in society using the social justice ethic, where in the seminar at George Washington, students are taught, quote, American Christians receive things they don't deserve and are not worthy of getting. And this fucking thing goes on forever, doesn't it? Oh, I'm never going to finish it. Oh, my God. This guy has a real thorn up his ass here. But this whole resolution, this whole idea is that social justice, which I'm not certainly not a theologian, so I know the Bible, so what? But I will tell you, it's my understanding that the only thing Jesus talked about was social justice. Am I right or wrong? And this fucker has the gall in this thing to talk about social justice sorts out privilege. Oh, my God, we can't have that. But don't these people ever, ever read the Sermon on the Mount? Or what did Jesus give? Three sermons? Four sermons? What were they about? And these are Christians, huh? These are fascists. These are people who want to blow up the earth. And deep in this evil fucking Reverend Jeffress and Pastor Hagee's hearts, deep in their hearts, they were thrilled to participate in moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem because these Christians want blood. And what more provocative move could be had in the Mideast than to do what these sons of bitches sanctified? Netanyahu, Trump. You've got Netanyahu, a Zionist Jew. You've got Trump, a fucked up atheist. And then you have these Christian fascists all working together to bring about the Christian Armageddon. Armageddon, Netanyahu, are you fucking insane? Why would you want to deal with Christians? Do you think that when the time comes to slit the throats of Jews because you won't accept Jesus, do you think that these Christian evangelical pastors are going to say, oh, wait a minute, let's not slit Netanyahu's throat? Of course, that day will never come because these people are waiting for some fucking fairy tale to come true. Jesus is going to descend from the clouds, and then all the naked people are going to ascend into the clouds. Woohoo! It'd be like a freeway at 5 o'clock. Where are you going? I'm going to heaven. Where are you going? Well, I'm coming down. Well, I'm going up. Our sponsors tonight were Susan from Seattle, only she's not in Seattle anymore. She's now Susan from Georgia. She's moved here to the South. She says she's loving living in a town with a population of 228. That's not a town, Susan. No, that's a, I don't know what the hell you would call that. There are a lot of little places like that in the South, though. She says she likes it because no traffic, all caps. Can't wait for your fall get-together in the Georgia mountains. Put me down as a participant. Come on, all you true seekers, join me. And then from Anonymous, thank you, humble and obedient servant, for sticking it out until the ship sinks. That's a spooky one. But it's, I guess that's what we're doing. Right, Kathy? Well, I'm out of stuff. What do I got, a minute and a half? I don't know what to say that I haven't said so many times. I really do. I don't know where this comes from. Maybe it just comes because I'm a human being. I know you probably feel the same way. I know a lot of our listeners do. But I have this feeling of just horrible pain when I see people who are being tortured in any form, any manner, whether they're Palestinians or Central Americans or Jews in the ghetto in Poland and Germany and all over Europe. I mean, any of that. To see people being brutalized and tortured and killed and locked up simply because of what they believe or who they are or where they're coming from or the color of their skin. What the fuck? How long have human-type creatures been on this little blue marble? What, 80,000 years where they could be considered human? Haven't we fucking learned yet? I'll see you tomorrow. Maybe I'll be able to turn on the camera tomorrow. I know a lot of people are saying, hey, where's our video? Well, I'm sorry, but your video is somewhere in the floating in the infinite, because when you've had your fucking back opened up and your spine cut into, you're not, like I did, you're not real inclined to sit here on camera and go, hi,
Hi, how are you?
No offense, but anyway, I'll see you next time. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Moore.